Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on season one of Stumptown. And we're going to do this in at least two parts. The first part of what they aired, I guess the first nine episodes prior to the winter hiatus or whatever. And then we'll come back, do the rest of the season. I reserve the right to do a middle segment after I've had a chance to read the comic.
Oh, fair. Yes.
If we decide that that's worth doing. Because I know that Stumptown is based on a comic by Greg Rucka and some other guys, and they're fully credited and stuff. They're actually co-executive producers of the show. But I've never read it. And I'm curious how much they've adapted or altered it from the comic to this.
I'm curious too, actually.
I'm sure the lead character is more or less the same, whether the bar setting, the brother, the cop, and all that stuff is there. I don't know.
I was wondering about how much of the surrounding cast.
Yeah, because when we first, we watched this in two batches, one of the first three episodes, then the next six. And I felt the first three were okay.
It was very slow to hook me.
Yeah, I felt the episodes we watched, the second batch tonight, the 4 through 9, were stronger and better than the first three.
It took a while to find its voice.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode was so determined to be unique in terms of the main character, Dex, how yeah. she stands out from others and a few things like that, that I, for me, it kind of lost its way in some respects. It was so focused on the one character.
It was focused on the one character, but also getting her set up, the first couple, getting her set up as a private investigator, getting the bar going, understanding what's the deal with Dex and Gray, what's going on with the brother, you know, getting the cop and his boss kind of involved in the story, what's going on with the reservation and and all of that, and Dex's backstory with Benny and all this, that by the time we got through the first couple of episodes, and really into like the fourth even, we still have the PI she was interning under and stuff to get her license. It took a little while to get all of that kind of set up and solidified that we were now, okay, I don't say fully into the story, because it was done in one aspects.
No, but that essential world building.
Yeah.
To bring it to life.
Well, and what I've noticed in the comics with Greg Rucka is there's a lot of world building that goes on.
I can imagine that based on he's built a very vibrant world here.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of we've got the Indian reservation versus we've got the city, and we've started experiencing quite a few of the dynamics between those two.
Kind of the intersection of the two worlds and stuff like that. Well, and also we've got kind of sort of a love triangle between Dex in the middle and then Gray and then the cop on the other side. They introduced Liz as the bartender girlfriend of Gray to kind of get another kind of love triangle sort of thing going on. All of Gray's background as an ex-con and stuff came in for a few episodes. And there's a lot of episodic mystery casework or whatever.
Well, when they,
but also an arc.
When they brought in Gray's background, it was a will this undermine he's this too good to be true kind of good guy best friend, or will it prove we've judged him right? And they played that well.
Yeah, there was a lot of nuances I think it brought to his character and a few others.
Mm-hmm. They've done really well with the brother Ansel.
Yes. That was one that initially I was like, geez, what is this character going to bring in? Is it going to get quickly forgotten and just be the younger sibling to the detective sort of a thing? Having the character have Down syndrome.
I worried it was a gimmick.
Yeah, so did I. And it hasn't been. It's actually been playing out subtly and well.
Yes.
And I attribute a lot of that to the actor they got.
Yes.
Who's doing a great job with the role.
Well, and the way he interacts with the actor playing Gray.
The chemistry between those two.
Yeah.
There's a really good kind of back and forth and stuff in a fun way that makes the relationship between Gray and Dex believable.
Yes. Well, there's an aspect, and I mean, comparing it to the show Leverage, where there was kind of a, I hate it when the parents fight, mm-hmm. in reference to the two characters that play kind of the adults to the younger team members. You know, the younger brother Ansel gives Dex and Gray that I hate it when the parents fight kind of dynamic.
Yes. And there's definitely between Dex and Gray, there is that they may as well be a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not, and they're not in a relationship. They've had one in the past, kind of thing. But those layers of subtext and the different relationship dynamics at play in the series.
Yeah.
Even as much as when we later get the female cop, who's basically the one Hoffman, detective, kind of, I need another opinion on this kind of a thing. You know, at first I was like, is she into him? But she's there as a sounding board for him to get him back on kind of the straight and narrow on the relationship with Dex.
Yeah.
So there's stuff that could have just been a throwaway, oh, it's just another cop in the precinct kind of things that had a lot more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and going back to the brother for a moment, with Ansel, they had one really good subplot in the episode where they explored Gray's background.
Gray gets basically roped into a heist that he wants no part of, and the people that have pulled him in pretty much know they're going to need a little leverage. It was going to be, you know, it's hang out at his bar and find whoever's close to him. Thought it was going to be Dex, but they wound up taking Ansel instead.
Yeah.
And Ansel kind of gets wind, this isn't on the up and up, and gets word out.
Yeah. Well, and the way they did it is they had that he keeps in his wallet a laminated card that he can show to any stranger,
mm-hmm.
that says, my name is Ansel, I am lost. Please call my sister Dex at this phone number and tell her.
Yeah.
And he simply hands it to a waitress in a discreet place where the bad guy can't see. And it plays so well. And like I said, it plays like a PSA of, you know, this is brilliant. And it's not something I've heard of that people are saying, hey, we should make sure that vulnerable kids have this on them and know what to do with it.
Well, and what's interesting with that character of Ansel is they don't kind of play him like an idiot.
Mm-mm.
Or a child. He's got Down syndrome. There are certain, you know, aspects of that, that he's the guy who winds up grabbing him, you know, is trying to figure out a crossword puzzle. The guy who's got the answer is Ansel and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Ansel is shown as a competent, functioning person,
mm-hmm.
not either just as somebody either, you know, developmentally challenged or worse, a plot device kind of thing.
From what I know of Down syndrome, from a few family friends that have a family member with it, it's a very real representation,
mm-hmm.
of Down syndrome.
Yeah, I think they're doing very well with that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of times where it's like everybody seems to know everybody.
Yes.
In this town. I don't know how big Portland is, but that seems a little coincidental. But it's a TV show. I'll grant them that. But even some of the more peripheral main characters, the guy who's the chef with the food truck's been well used a couple of times.
Yeah.
They built a little bit of a relationship between him and the head cop.
The police lieutenant.
The police lieutenant and stuff. That was fun. So there's a lot more kind of connective stuff in it.
Well, and I think part of why they're calling it Stumptown, it's not all of Portland. It's some little borough within Portland.
I don't know if Stumptown is a borough within Portland or one of the many nicknames for the city of Portland.
Okay. See, that's interesting. I had taken it to be like the Gaslamp quarter down in San Diego.
I'd taken it to be more of a nickname for the whole.
Interesting. Okay.
But don't live there, don't know.
Exactly. And that's my problem.
Yeah. But while we haven't gotten a feel for the city, we've gotten a feel for this sort of social subset of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that these characters are getting a little bit more realized than I think most characters in procedural shows.
Yeah.
Helps. Because if you think about it, you can, I mean, we've talked about a couple of different procedural shows on these episodes. Take Two.
Carter.
There was one or two others that were that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's all in service of the plot and the mystery of the week.
Yeah, they're definitely balancing the character development and character scenes against the procedural elements.
Yeah, and I'd be hard-pressed to name what percentage is here's the case of the week and what percentage is here's what the characters are going through this week,
mm-hmm.
regardless of the case.
In fact, there was one episode that I started to comment to you that the pacing was feeling very peculiar, because while it was kind of case of the week, because it was Gray, who our characters didn't yet know had gone missing, but we knew had gone missing.
Yeah.
We were getting a lot of character stuff that didn't yet feel case stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really interesting balance at that point.
Well, and there have been a couple of episodes that have done some flashbacks to give us some much needed backstory. What happened 12 years ago when Benny died?
Mm-hmm.
Or how did Gray and Dex meet? How did that kind of evolve?
That turned out to be a surprisingly interesting episode.
That, I think, was a really good one. They could have used that as the basis of just a relationship-based drama, you know, ditch the whole PI stuff kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two people that are effectively soulmates, but just don't realize it.
Yeah.
And I think that aspect of the will they, won't they, with the, yeah, and they probably won't, because they, not that they know better, but they, you know, tried it and it failed or what have you.
Now, what they haven't given us is where are they, what happened to Dex's and Ansel's parents?
Yeah, there's definitely a backstory to be had there that I think we're going to get probably later this season.
I want it this season. I don't want to wait beyond this season for it.
Yeah, one, I'm not sure if there's going to be another season. And two, there have enough things, like at one point when Gray and Dex were fighting and Ansel's like, you know, is he going to leave like mom and dad did or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, mom and dad have left. We've gotten little pieces of this.
Yeah, well, and we know at one point Ansel was taken away in a car.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it may have happened when they were young. Ansel was taken away for a while. She went to go back. So I do think there's story material there that I don't want to say they're obligated to tell us, but that they've made us curious about and want to know more about.
Well, it's a big unanswered question because we're in their parents' house.
Yes.
But we have no sign of parents.
Yes. So at what point did what happen? Did she have to kind of fight for custody? You know, how did all that play out?
Yeah.
And that's one that seems like a good flashback mixed with something relevant in the current day, sort of an episode. And I would expect to get that at some point.
Well, they've done interesting episodes in terms of having her apprentice under another PI and in the process learn the kind of PI she doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
She's been pitted against another PI, competing basically for the same case, and in the process basically been told there are the type of cases you want and the type of cases that kind of feel like blood money.
That pay the bills, yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is Dex has taken a few cases, regretted taking them, and turned down the money.
Yes.
You know, and it's not that she doesn't need the money.
Yes.
She does.
Yeah.
But she's also not really had a steady job in like 10 years or something. So there's the question of how does she make ends meet prior to becoming the PI?
That's a perpetual question in TV land.
Yeah, but one that we might actually get an answer to, particularly if they do a flashback as to what happened to the parents.
I'd like it.
You know, how were they able to keep the house and survive?
Yeah.
So it's one that if you had asked me after the first night where we'd watch just the first three, like I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some potential for it, but there were a couple of things like the mixtape that would just go on with the, you know, appropriate song at the weird time or whatever.
Usually with a bump in the road.
Usually with a bump in the road. Now, not only do we get it, sometimes we get it in other people's car.
Yes.
And they're very, I don't say aggressive with the music selection, but more so than I think most shows.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. But the way they set that up needed a little bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, okay, now I'm used to it. In the first episode, whenever they'd cut to the commercial break or whatever, you'd get this freeze frame and it'd be Photoshopped to look comic book-esque.
They did that enough in the first, at least two episodes, I think. They did it enough during the first three when we were watching it, that I asked you if they were trying to drive home to me that this was based on a comic book.
Yeah, and I think they were, and I think it was a mistake. They're still doing it in later episodes, not as much. They've toned down.
The one time I think they did a really good job with the, you know, the source materials comic books, right, folks, was when they were working on the web page.
Yeah, and I'm curious if the image of Dex from that was from the comic.
Yeah.
Or at least by the artist.
It was kind of a, you know, she's not going to pose for a photo for her web page, so somebody's going to have to draw something kind of scene. And it was a good piece of art. They played it well in the scene. It worked.
Yeah, I thought that worked well. And when they do the cut to an image, you know, stop on an image and kind of, I don't say comic book eyes, but you know what I mean, do the line work over it for the title credit, that works.
Yes, it does.
When they stop doing it, you know, going to and from the commercial break, that helps because it didn't work there. So this is something that I don't think most people would realize is based on a comic. It does have the credits based on the graphic novels by, and it's like, no, these were comic books.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have superpowers. It doesn't have crazy other stuff. It's just another PI show, which on TV isn't unique. In comics, I think it is a bit more unique.
I believe that. Yeah.
And I am curious to get a hold of some of the material and see what it was like.
I'm curious how it made the transition.
Mm-hmm. How much of this that we're seeing in the show is just a faithful adaptation? How much of it is they decided, hey, let's change a few things here and there?
Yeah. I'm curious how much of the ensemble we've grown accustomed to came out of the comics.
This is very much an ensemble show. Was it a feature character there, or was it an ensemble in the comic? Good question. Yeah.
I'm also curious if the Indian reservation is such a player, if you will, in the comic.
Yeah, yeah. And how much of it is case of the week versus, you know, character-based in the comic?
Yeah.
Because I could see it either being a faithful adaptation or one that somebody said, we need to retool it to work for TV.
Yeah.
And I don't know yet. So the later episodes, I liked it a lot more.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think it got its feet, and it got it fairly quickly.
Yeah, it just took at least 3-4 episodes. To me, it was, I think, after the fourth when we got rid of the other PI.
Yes.
And she started to do her own thing, including, you know, the interview for the license.
Well, and it's funny because when we first met the other PI, I'm like, this has potential. This guy could be a good other character to occasionally see. And we had maybe 3 scenes with him. And I'm like, or we can simply blow him out of the sky and never see him again.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of a either or.
Yeah, there are a couple of times where it's like either this person's going to be recurring or they're gone in another episode.
Yeah, you know, well, it was just I didn't like the direction they went with the mentor.
Yeah. He was not on the up and up, and I feel they did an about-face redemption of him later in it.
Yeah.
And again, was he in the comic? Was he not? You know.
Well, betrayal is a strong theme in the show.
Mm-hmm. Betrayal, trust.
Yeah.
All those kinds of things. The other thing that does kind of come and go, and I'm curious how much of this may or may not have been from the comic, is Dex has PTSD.
Yes.
It's tied to Benny's death, and some episodes it really plays in at appropriate times. We've had a few where it didn't come in at all.
Yeah.
So, again, don't know how much of that is based on the source material and how much of it is new for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a good cast. I think they did well picking who they have for the spots, and the plots are different.
Mm-hmm.
We've had one or two that it's like, you know, I don't think we have seen this kind of a plot on a procedural thing before for the case of the week. And with every episode of any procedural that comes out, that's one more thing that could be seen before, you know?
Yeah.
Not to say these haven't been done before, it's just I haven't seen them. And the character interactions work. So far I'm pleased with this. I'm curious. I think it may have another 9 episodes after the holidays.
That sounds right.
But we'll see how long it lasts, how well it does in the ratings, and if it looks like it'll come back for a second season or not.
Well, and I think the one character we didn't really talk about is the one Michael Ealy is playing, the police detective.
Yeah, Detective Hoffman. We talked a little about him, but not too much.
But that's one character where I think a lesser actor wouldn't have had me falling in love with the character.
Having seen him in Almost Human, I think it was, with
Almost Human, Being Human, Almost Human.
Something like that. It was him and the guy who played Bones in Trek. Carl Urban.
Yes.
And Carl Urban was basically a burnt-out cop, and this guy was like a robot cop.
Yeah.
And we've seen variations on that sort of a show literally for decades, going all the way back to at least Holmes and Yo-Yo, if not further. And he was good there, he's good here.
Wait, the character has a fun sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
and he finds the humor in almost everything. Complete with when he invites Dex over to his apartment for dinner, and each of them is trying to pump the other for information about the case. Yeah, he's
trying to get information on, I guess it was Gray, and she's trying to get information on her case. And
Yeah.
I thought some of that was fun. And he's going after kind of justice and stuff, sometimes more so than his boss would care for. But he's also trying to go about things the right way, but also is questioning, you know, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
So he's not a one-note character.
Yeah.
And basically none of these are, and again, I keep saying it, I'm curious how much of that is from the comic.
Yeah, I can see that.
But this is one where I'd be curious to see the writer's guide for the show to see where they think the character kind of parameters are.
You know, I'd be curious because in the past when we've gone to conventions, you know, we've heard various actors say, you know, DC sent me a bunch of books before I did this superhero show or that superhero show. I would be curious if anybody from Stumptown, actors or writers, was sent kind of a cherry-picked selection of this is the must-reads.
I don't think it'd be cherry-picked because my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, if there is more than 20 issues.
Interesting. Okay.
I believe it was like a 7-issue run here, a 6-issue run here, an 8-issue run there, sort of a thing, and like maybe 3 or 4 runs.
Wow.
But I don't know. But
based on how vibrant the world we're seeing is, I figured there was more source material than that.
Rucka is one of those that packs a lot of depth into a surprisingly small page count at times. And he is one of the more intentional writers. Because there's some writers that say, oh, I'm going to write myself into a corner because I got a month to figure out how to get out. That's the fun.
Yeah.
Whereas Rucka is much more of a meticulous kind of a planner and plotter. And I've seen him talk at conventions over the years and stuff like that. And the guy is sharp.
Well, this is the show where you have the ex-felon who opens a bar called Bad Alibi. And how many episodes later leaves a message saying he went to visit his aunt in Houston to a character who knows he doesn't have an aunt or any relatives in Houston.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bit of a sense of humor there. And again, is the bar in the comic and stuff.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much is or isn't in the comic, it was a well-constructed show because I don't feel we've got any characters that are particularly extraneous.
Agreed.
There's one or two that are a little more on the fringe than main characters. The chef is a good example.
I'd say the lieutenant is underused in terms of not just barely there, but when Cameron Manheim is on screen, very rarely is she given great material.
Yeah, but I think in my mind that was the nature of that role.
That's true.
I mean, it's the same thing for almost any sergeant, you know, or equivalent in any kind of procedural show.
Yeah.
You know, the example I want to use is Chips with Sergeant Kircher.
Oh, but we loved him.
Yeah, but he was the one at the beginning. He'd give the briefing. They'd go off, have the episode. He'd come back and lecture him or congratulate him or whatever. But you rarely saw him out in the field.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the Cameron Manheim character here, Cosgrove. We see her out and about, but her role is not central. It's to be the authority figure against which Dex and Hoffman and stuff bounce against. You know.
I guess my point is, like, in Lethal Weapon, Avery occasionally had some really good material.
True. True, but I think that was one where the nature of those characters is one that they're constantly pushing and needing to be pushed back against.
Yeah.
By their superior officer and stuff. But even here, Cosgrove has some backstory with the tribe.
Yes.
And stuff like that. So there's things going on here.
Yeah.
You know, she had the backstory with the private eye.
Yeah.
So part of it is how small is the town, and part of it is the characters there to give avenues into certain stories.
And we know she's been in Portland 25 years.
Yes. And has a husband that may or may not come into play later.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how much of this is just the onion peeling that we just haven't had time to get to yet. How much of this is things that we could learn from the comic? How much of this is things that they have set up for later?
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't know yet.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how the second half of the season unfolds. After the first 3 episodes, I was curious for more, mostly in terms of the characters.
Yeah, I think if we had stopped at the first three and had hit something where we just didn't have time to watch for a couple of weeks or something, or like watch anything or something, this would have been a little harder to come back to.
Yeah.
But where we left it now, yeah, I do want to come back to it.
Yeah.
I wasn't sold after three. I'm more sold after nine. And to me, it fills the spot of a procedural show. It is more interesting than many we have watched.
Yeah.
It's a little more dysfunctional in a few areas, but that's what it's going for.
But it doesn't cross into soap opera.
What's funny is it's got a ton of relationship character stories, but they're not soap operatic.
Exactly.
And that's where I think it really shines.
Yes.
And it's not flat, two-dimensional, or over the top.
Yeah.
Because there are times some of the relationship character stuff we've gotten in other procedurals, it's like, really?
Yeah. Well, there was one point...
It's shtick in other shows.
There was one point in this last episode where Michael Ealy Hoffman looks at the lady cop and he's like, so not related to the case. And he asks her a question. And at first she's just kind of looking at him like, do you need me to actually utter an answer to that question? Or did you hear your question and realize the answer is obvious?
It's like, what do you want me to tell you that'll make what you're thinking okay?
You know, and it was kind of a in Lethal Weapon that would have been the bromance banter. But here they spun it a whole different direction and it was equally hilarious.
Well, I think it worked better here because it wasn't banter.
Yes, that's true.
And we've got a little bit at times back and forth between some characters, but not in the banterish way that we get either on Hawaii Five-O that we'd gotten Lethal Weapon or in some other shows.
They sneak sincerity in here.
Yeah, it's... Again, got some depth to it, and I think the fact that these are better realized characters helps a lot.
Yeah.
So, we may come back after I've read the comics, we may not, depends when I get around to reading them, and we will come back after watching the later part of the season.
Sounds good.
Cool. So, we've watched the second half of the season, and it's been a while since we watched the first part.
Yes.
So I don't even remember what we talked about in that part. So if I repeat myself, oh well. But they covered quite a bit of ground in these, I guess, nine episodes, because it was 10 through 18. And we got some very good progression and handling of Dex's PTSD.
Yes.
I thought we got good payoff on that. Some of the stuff that was set up as kind of the arc of what happened to Benny and stuff got resolved. They added, I don't see one or two new cast members, but one or two recurring characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in terms of Benny and the whole season, really, they did a great job with Benny's mother and Dex.
Yes, that relationship completely evolved in such over the course of it, where she started out just as a thorn in Dex's side. Now they're very much kind of allied in many respects. Yeah.
You can see how the relationship healed over the course of the season and the work that was put into that healing.
Yeah. How and why. And I felt they earned that and they did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
And also the evolution of how Dex and Gray's relationship evolved and morphed and still somehow stayed kind of the same.
Well, it's funny because Dex and Gray come across as almost a cross between an old married couple that's very comfortable in their relationship and a, I guess you would say, sort of a happily divorced couple, because they have the separate households. They're very happy having the two separate households.
It's almost the reversal of sorts of the will they or won't they that a standard PI thing does of they're starting to date or whatever.
Yeah.
They're on almost, it seems like, the downhill slope of that relationship in some respects.
They're after the will they or won't they to the, they've settled into the, they're perfectly happy where they are as one another's other halves without the stress and the pressure. And yet they don't seem to have ever actually dated. They had a one night stand and then went straight to the friend zone.
Because there was that one episode early on where they set that up and gave kind of the backstory there. It's funny, though, because there are so many times where it's clear they know each other inside and out.
Well, and yet they are still learning things about one another. Because like when Ansel moves in with Gray, because he wants to be independent, and Dex shows up the next morning.
Because Ansel was the one who makes the coffee.
Yeah, but Gray didn't know that, so Ansel ratted her out.
Well, and what a great kind of little character moment for Ansel.
Yes, yes.
And again, the actor playing Ansel is just doing terrific in the role.
Well, and I think one of the really great moments they had for both Ansel and Gray was when Gray was looking at the list of all the things Ansel wanted to do to prove he's a man and before he asks a certain girl out. And Gray realizes these are all things Ansel has seen Gray do.
That scene played so well because the interaction between those two actors is just, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah, it was beautiful.
And really, I would say, as much as I'm liking the characters and the writing and the acting and stuff, what I think has made this show really work for me is the casting.
Yes.
Because I could see where they could have tried to have done all of this with not so much a lesser cast, but a cast that didn't gel the way this one did.
Mm-hmm.
The way Ansel and Gray interact.
Well, the way that Ansel seems to ground Dex and hold her together. It's not that Dex is taking care of Ansel, and that's why Ansel lives with Dex.
Dex needs Ansel as much as Ansel needs Dex and stuff. And moving Ansel into the loft over the bar with Gray for a while spun the dynamic a bit. It allowed certain scenes to play out that wouldn't and shouldn't have otherwise.
But it also gave insight into why they were living together.
Well, and also when Tuki, the chef, was asking Gray, are you going to get with her? Are you not? And he's like, I'm not what she needs right now. And Tuki's like, well, what does she need right now? And one of the next things we see is Ansel moving back in.
Yeah.
Because Gray knew that's what Dex needed.
Yeah.
And not only do the actors portray that just beautifully and stuff and sell all of that and make it so believable, but because we've gotten to know these characters and we know these characters know each other so well.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, yeah, of course that makes sense. That is what she needed. And we've seen enough evidence of that, that it's not, well, oh, geez, that was convenient. They moved him out to move him back in. No, no. All of that had an arc. It had a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how much, because I haven't read any of the comics this is based on. I think there was three different volumes. One was like a 4-issue miniseries. One went from maybe about 10, and there was another 5-issue miniseries or something like that. But I don't know how much of that came out of what Greg Rucka had done in the comics, how much of that was then turned into the treatment or the series Bible for the show to get it sold, and how much of that was the writers on the show. And there's part of it that had to be at all the different layers.
Yeah.
Because some of the dialogue and things like that clearly is the individual script writer for the episodes. When we've got the episode that had really the focus on the PTSD, flashing back to the, is she going to torture somebody or not sort of a thing, and how that's rippling to her PI case today.
Mm-hmm.
The way that was handled in terms of the pictures get slid forward, oh, that references back this, we're starting to see her slip into, you know, having a trigger moment or whatever. And it was, they sold it.
Yeah.
Both in terms of the acting, but also the way the script built it up. And we'd seen enough things to know she didn't come back from the war zone the way she went into it.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising and definitely a problem that we need to deal with in our society of we expect so much out of our military, and there's a very real psychological cost to that.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not helping them properly, you know, deal with and I'll say get over, but we need to do better.
Well, and I liked the PTSD support group they did in this. It was basically a come play pool. It's at a bar. So if you're drinking alcohol, there's alcohol available. And if you're doing sobriety, it's a no pressure situation.
What was interesting with that is it started when she takes a job with somebody looking for his birth parents who'd been in the military, and he's like, you've got some issues, I do this, it's, you know, not touchy-feely, it's just we go have drinks and talk.
Yeah.
But then when she first goes to the group, I was surprised that that actor didn't come back, but some other military person that we see another time or two.
Yeah.
Did. Now, that may have just been a scheduling issue for the actor. But the fact that that other actor came back was part of, okay, here's this other case that triggers the PTSD and stuff like that. And all of that played into the resolution of what happened with Benny.
Yeah.
This is a PI procedural show.
Mm-hmm.
The private investigator gets a case, solves the case, next episode, move on, is a standard version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we were getting ongoing arcs with how the cases kind of build on one another.
Yeah.
Callbacks to, you know, everything with the reservation and how you can kind of, I don't say get out of jail free, but it's like the Dukes of Hazzard. You cross this line and they can't chase you anymore.
You deal with tribal police instead of city police.
Yeah. But we also got the character arcs with Ansel, with Gray, with Miles, all of these characters. There's a lot going on in this show, and it never feels like, oh, well, they just needed to cut away from the action to go do a token subplot or something. No, the subplots are fun. They're good.
Well, and they're also doing a lot to basically cover the fact that, look, you may think that what we're talking about is just something from the 1980s or something from the 1990s. It's history, but it has consequences. It has repercussions. And this is how the 20, the 30, the 40 years later, it's still affecting people and frankly not for the better in mm-hmm. the situations where a PI gets called in. And the one where the kid looking for the birth parents is the prime example.
Yeah. Well, and it took that in a direction I hadn't really expected it to go in terms of he winds up being 48% Native American, which is what triggered the whole thing, mm-hmm. how that plays into Dex's relationship with Benny's mom. Can she help him? Can she not? Oh, she's heard about this stuff. There's an intertwinedness of the narrative that makes sense, doesn't feel forced, doesn't feel convoluted. Well, of course she knows somebody who can help with this. Or what are the odds that... And there's a few times where, okay, you could ask that question.
Well, but one of the strengths of the character Dex and what makes the show work is she does have a strong moral compass when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
I mean, she may be okay with breaking and entering to get what she needs to solve the case and to fight the good fight.
She doesn't believe that the ends justify the means, but her ends never need justification because she's always at the heart of it going for the right cause.
Mm-hmm.
She may make mistakes. She may bend the rules. She may flat out break a couple of them, but there is a trying to do the right thing, trying to get to justice and a good outcome, even if her route is not, you know, a direct line there.
Well, and we go through most of one episode where we come to realize she's spent 12 years blaming herself for disobeying a direct order.
Mm-hmm.
It was an illegal direct order.
Well, and that she thought that is what led to Benny's death.
Yeah.
And it's funny because an episode or two prior, we had gotten her telling kind of that part of the story to the tattoo artist.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole arc of that episode of, you know, the tattoo artist's story, you know, can he be trusted? Is he, you know, a gold digger? Whatever. Really, while it was a good story in and of itself, had a bit of a twist to how that case kind of started and stopped, it echoed the bigger story and set up and reminded us of the things we needed this part in the season.
Yeah.
About Benny, about Blackbird, all that kind of stuff. I think without that episode, the finale of the season, because it'd been set up originally early in the show and we'd had the hiatus and now it's months later, I don't think the ending would have worked as well.
Yeah.
So it's a well-written show. It's a well-paced show.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not just falling into the, I don't say the formulaic shtick of a PI show, but I think the writing on this is definitely better than just some of the other PI shows we've talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back a season or two where we talked about, what was it, Take Two, Carter,
mm-hmm.
there was another one that was a similar, you know, celebrity private eye kind of a thing. And this is not a celebrity private eye. It's different subgenre or whatever. But all of those had a little bit more of a cliche case of the day.
Mm-hmm.
There was not as much carryover of plot and character development.
Yeah.
Whereas here, we've not only gotten to know Dex, Ansel, Gray, Miles, Tukey, Cosgrove to a lesser extent.
Yeah.
But we've gotten to know Miles' mom and his dad was showing up significantly there at the end with Stephen
Williams.
Williams, thank you.
From 21 Jump Street.
21 Jump Street, doing a great job on that.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple of times where one or two of the guests they get, I found kind of interesting. When they did the LA episode, the guest they got there was from, among other places, Veritas.
Alex Carter.
Alex Carter, thank you. And the lead actress.
Kobe Smulders.
Thank you. Blanking on the names. Kobe Smulders was also on that show.
See, I don't remember her on that. That was a good show. It didn't last long.
Lasted a season.
Yeah, but it was a good show.
I remember enjoying it, but that's about all I remember of it.
Yeah. It was kind of an archaeology search for the truth, hence the name Veritas.
Yeah.
Show.
But it's nice when they've got people they've worked with and, hey, no can do a good job and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was one episode where we recognized a name, and once the story started unfolding and they get to the, and then some old guy accuses her, and I'm like, does that mean that the most famous name we recognized really did it?
Well, that was one in that particular episode as we're watching the credits for the guest cast. It's like, oh, Stephen Williams, I think, was in there. It's like, well, Miles' dad is coming back. And then it's like, I recognize that name. And then it's Bernie Coppell. And I'm like, well, damn. That was the doctor on the Love Boat.
Yep.
I'm like, I wonder what he's doing. And then the minute we get to him, there was an old guy who identified the witness. Like, I know who the old guy is. Yeah. Which you jump in with, did he do it?
Yeah.
And it's not like it was a major role. It was, you know, if that was more than like an hour or two's worth of his time shooting wise. I mean,
I was going to say he probably spent a lot of time in makeup, actually, because he was pretty banged up on the face.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was, again, fun to see a known actor from who's really his heyday was in the 70s because he was on Get Smart.
Yeah.
So, again, fun callbacks there, but they've really done a good job on how they set the show up, how the show evolved, how it handles the episodic PI aspect. Mm-hmm. They've nailed the season arc.
Yeah. I think the only thing I feel they're struggling with is, do they or don't they have a triangle between Dex, Gray, and Miles? And if so, how are they going to deal with it? And I say that because they seem to, towards the end, have said, well, instead of doing the triangle, we'll have Miles and the lady cop be in something and create a whole different type of awkwardness for him and Dex.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing a traditional love triangle. I think they're doing the life is messy.
Yes.
And by doing that intertwinedness and stuff. And I also think that one of the subplots that's definitely going to come into play second season, and we know they get a second season, is the relationship between parent and child.
Yes.
Because we've gotten a little of that over the course of this with Ansel, even though that's the younger brother of Dex. But there's a time where Dex and Gray are kind of acting as parents, Tookie even as a surrogate parent.
Definitely. Well, and there's even opening a conversation about joint custody.
Yeah.
Between Dex and Gray.
But then when you introduce Miles's parents.
Yeah.
And the relationship Miles has with his father in particular, who's a lawyer, and some of the craziness that ensues of him being on the opposite side of the case, etc., which was, again, really well done. But then the introduction of Gray's father.
Mm-hmm.
Who had been out of the picture for a while and stuff, and it's starting to work out. They're starting to, you know, the guy's really turned out okay. And then the twist at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's going to put Gray in a situation similar to two that he'd been in this season. When he kind of got rooked back into his life of crime. And then later when Miles was tapping him to be a CI.
Yeah. Well, and actually I liked it when he was doing the CI stuff for Miles. It was kind of a, he can keep doing what he's good at, but not be breaking the law.
I thought it was good for Gray. I thought it was not great for Miles.
I would agree with that.
Miles, I felt, was a little, at least initially, kind of abusive or something.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Miles was flat out blackmailing him into doing it.
Yes. I loved the scene, though, at the end after Gray had negotiated the 13% or whatever, but had let one of the people go. And Miles couldn't prove that, but was like 100% sure. And he's like, well, here's your check. You sure it was worth it? And then tears up the check.
Yes. Yes.
And Gray's like, oh, that's cold. And then Miles pulls out the real check.
Yes. Yes. It was beautifully done.
Oh, yeah. And they sold it.
They did. Yes.
So, and it's one of those things that this show has a sensibility to it that if they had decided, nope, be torn it up, I'd have bought that too.
Well, and honestly, they could have gotten away with that in terms of, on the one hand, Miles said he couldn't do that because it would have been a violation of the contract. But on the other hand, Miles is pretty darn sure Gray walked out of a previous case with $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So Miles could have basically been saying, you know, so you worked off 35 grand from what you've already taken.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a number of ways they could have played it. I think the way they went worked out pretty well.
I mean, Miles, going back to Dex has the moral compass, Miles is the guy who plays by the rules.
We've seen most of the different characters interact in different ways. Tuki with Dex, Tuki with Ansel and stuff like that, and Ansel and Gray and stuff like that. Miles and Gray. The one we haven't seen is Ansel and Miles.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, I think in the first half of the season, they were at a meal together and that's it. Because Miles had said, when am I going to meet your brother? And they had like Thanksgiving at the house or something.
That might have been it. Yeah.
But I think that's really the one time.
I would be hard pressed in the second half of the season to name any time they were together.
I mean, they were in the bar at the same time, but they didn't have those quality interactions.
They may have been physically in the same place, but again, they didn't build a relationship there.
Yeah. And I think that's, to me, that's something that the show is lacking and I wish it would pick up on.
But I think that's going to be something that comes up probably next season because Ansel's now dating.
Mm.
But the big thing is we've gotten the twist with Gray's father. And then, not that we see the actress, but, you know, Ansel and Dex's mom apparently is back.
Well, that's a great way to not have to cast the character yet.
Absolutely. Hold off on the casting. I mean, they probably knew who they wanted, but
probably
scheduling
but yeah.
and stuff like that makes sense to wait. But they'd also built up some of the mystery as to the parents had left, what happened in the LA episode.
Mm-hmm.
They talked to the aunt.
Who has Alzheimer's.
Has Alzheimer's. So we make some progress, but leave things pretty open-ended. But now that the wound of what had happened to Benny is...
Yeah.
I don't say gone for Dex, but diminished.
Considerably healed.
Now let's open up the what happened with the parents stuff.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I'm curious how Benny's mother will help with that one. Because Benny's mother clearly adores Ansel.
Yeah. Well, and again, that is another parent-child relationship that part of it is absent, as is often the case for these things. Because it was clear both Gray and Dex had parental issues. We never saw the parents for the most part up until, again, late in the season when we get Gray's in there. And there were a couple of times where Tuki had mentioned knowing, you know, Ansel and Dex's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And Ansel's like, well, tell me about them.
Well, and honestly, I think that's why Tuki was the one helping set up at the end for Ansel's supposed date.
Yeah, yeah. Which I hope they actually show next season. I thought, again, the stuff they did with Ansel asking the girl out and the date and stuff, it was fun.
Yeah. Well, and what I loved was having Tuki and Gray two tables over chaperoning.
Yeah. It was interesting. Ansel had the chaperone. The girl didn't.
Tuki was, you know, chaperoning on behalf of, presumably.
It would have been hilarious if after we'd had that, if we'd had basically instead of them being in the picnic table with the other behind in that truck court, if Ansel and the girl had been at the back table in the front row, one to the left had been Tuki and Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're all done having that, the camera moves over two tables to the right, and we see a similar-ish discussion going on with the people who are presumably the chaperones for the girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that just could have been hilarious.
Well, and going back to your stuff that had payoff, we actually had a whole arc and payoff for Ansel at age 21 learning to drive.
Yes. At first, it's easy. I want to do it. Okay. And we get a few places where they're teaching, and that I don't want to say I got glossed over, but it didn't get a whole lot.
No, but I gotta say, having it start with the what is this for the form for in the interrogation room at the police station was priceless.
And again, some of the moments between Dex and Gray on that kind of stuff.
There, so often when we're watching shows, I will ask you, why are we in this location? Or why? Well, there was a scene in this show, actually. Tuki and his wife simply sitting in the chairs at the police station.
That worked for me because...
It did by the end of the scene. But when the scene started, I'm like, why are we just sitting here? Why didn't we leave and go somewhere private to have this conversation?
There was nowhere else to have that conversation other than the bar.
Yeah. By the time the conversation was over, I realized, okay, given what the conversation ended up being, I get why you didn't go to your car, didn't go somewhere else.
Well, hadn't brought the truck.
That's true.
And the food truck was the only other place to have it, and that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we're going to get more of Tuki's assistant.
Victor, maybe?
Victor, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, he was fun.
He shows up a little bit, adds some color commentary, whatever, but is very secondary of a character.
Yeah.
But well used, mm-hmm. And not just, oh yeah, we forgot about him, he's back. No, no.
Yeah.
You know, some of the comments when it looks like Ansel's getting dumped by the girl or whatever. Ooh, first breakup. That's hard, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm curious if next season Miles might dabble in private investigating. He's got two options.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility.
Because he ended with putting his badge on the desk.
With I'm not giving it up, but...
But hold on to it for me.
You were going
to
suspend me without pay anyways. I got to go find myself.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to how much time elapses between seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And with the door open reveal at the end...
I don't want a long passage of time.
I don't either. I actually want it to pick up right where they left off.
Yeah. Either that or the next morning with Dex in the bar at opening time drinking.
I would actually start the next season with a car pulling up and parking, maybe a similarly character type car to Dex's.
Mm-hmm.
You follow the feet as they walk up to the door. You hear the knock.
Yeah.
And you get kind of the opposite shot, you know, looking in as you know, Dex answers it instead of what we'd seen at the end.
Yeah.
From inside.
Two dropped jaws and a hi, Mom. Because yeah. Ansel doesn't seem to fully have appreciated how shocked Dex and Tuki were.
Yeah, yeah. But I think there's an aspect where they've all sheltered him.
Yes.
And he's just expecting them to come back at some point.
Yes.
So I am curious about the comic, how much of this is out of it. Either did they pull particular cases out of it? How much of the backstory is out of it? How many of these characters are mm-hmm. from the comics?
Yeah, me too.
Because I have no idea.
Yeah. You need to go read the source material and report back to your sister.
My intention is to read it. I've got plans to do a back issue spotlight with James on the first miniseries.
Okay.
And certainly I'll talk with him on that. I may have some of the discussion on what I thought from the show there with him, depending if he's watched it. And if it makes sense, we may come back and do a bonus third section on this.
Okay.
Of just, you know, here's what I learned and here's what I thought.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm definitely curious, like, if Ansel is in the comic.
Yeah, I'm expecting Dex is in the comic.
Mm.
Everything after that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would expect Benny and his mom, probably. Ansel, yeah, man, I don't know. And Gray?
Yeah.
Because there's just, I look at what they've done in these 18 episodes, and I don't even know if there are, I think there are maybe like 19 issues of the comic.
Interesting.
And a single comic, even one written by Greg Rucka, who's crazy talented and doesn't skimp on content, isn't as much content as we've gotten in the one season here.
Mm-hmm.
So how much is set up? How much is implied? How much is actually there? Man, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I've got to imagine that there was some pretty solid source material for them to pull all of this out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.